Welcome back, folks. This is the War Room. My job, as I see it right now, and it has been for the last week or so, is to desperately try to sift through the BS and find a little nuggets of truth contained within. And it's hard. It's not an easy task with AI, with recycled videos, you know, from last June being purported as modern strikes. I feel like I've done a pretty good job. There are just not a lot of glaring mistakes as far as I can tell. But really the most, you know, challenging part of it is the fact that Israel keeps a very tight lid on anything having to do with the war. You can go to jail for 5 years in Israel just for uploading a video of a missile impact or the damage afterwards. And they have police hunting people down, like finding out where videos were filmed and trying to, you know, geolocate whoever uploaded them. They're very serious about not letting information from Israel get out, which is why I don't trust a lot of the information in Israel. However, this is a BBC news clip with their correspondent Kasra Naji from Tel Aviv. Now, I translated this using AI, so you'll hear a robotic voice, and there's some awkward pauses because of the speed at which the translated text, you know, corresponds with the original language. So it sounds a little odd, but this, we translated this. So you're not going to see this translation anywhere else. This is a, you know, reporter speaking in Hebrew to BBC talking about what it's like in Tel Aviv last night. Let's watch.
Kasra, tell us about the situation in Tel Aviv. Jamal, Iranian missile attacks have continued here. The sirens have sounded several times today, and the last time the sirens sounded was a Hezbollah missile attack. Let's keep in mind that the distance from Lebanon to here is very short. And when a missile is fired from Lebanon towards here, there is little time to so-called warn the people. Our phones didn't respond to the rockets fired from Lebanon today, and we only heard a quick warning. This was something new. We haven't seen Hezbollah rockets reach Tel Aviv in the few days we've been here, and that too, considering the loud explosions we heard, it was clear that they were big rockets. God knows what kind of rockets. But before, there were several Iranian missile attacks here, which caused damage in on we're working. I just read that one of the aid organizations here wrote that in the past 24 hours, 76 people were injured here. And now 2 people have been killed. It seems that this is a situation that is becoming more and more difficult for the people here to bear. And last night, they were talking about the fact that this situation, that is, the rocket attacks, could continue for a long time. Note that here in Israel, everything is half closed. Right here in Tel Aviv, many shops and businesses are closed. Many of them are closed. The streets are deserted and there are many cars. You don't see many people on the streets. Today, one of our journalist colleagues came from Jerusalem and said that the entire market there is closed on holidays. He showed me a photo that it is completely empty. So the situation is becoming difficult for the Israeli government. The schools were supposed to open next week, but now I heard that the opening of my schools has been postponed for the time being.
So there you go. That's a reporter in Tel Aviv describing what it's like. Doesn't sound pleasant, that's for sure. Basically admitting that there's no warning before the missiles arrive. They get about a minute warning, although he said their phones didn't even go off for the latest one. Now, these missiles are, remember, coming from Hezbollah. They're coming from Lebanon. They're not even coming from Iran, which, of course, has the real monumental missile supply. And, of course, this is all after we were told that Hezbollah was totally destroyed. It was totally eradicated. They weren't a threat anymore. And yet they are actually not just raining missiles down on Tel Aviv and Haifa and scoring hits and destroying, you know, radar, everything, just every, all the missile launchers. They're really kicking butt. They're also doing sorties into Israel, which is not what Israel expected. And the Israelis are really not happy about this and are ready for it to be over.
You have the widest selection of Patriot apparel and some of the best designs. I shut out when our sponsor said, what do you want? I said, with the widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, sweaters, hats, you name it. I want classic Americana stuff. I want pro-Trump stuff. I want InfoWars stuff. I want comedy stuff. Christian, Crusader, pro-life, pro-Jesus, classic 1776 stuff, quality Leering Center, you know, joke stuff, classic InfoWars gear. It's all there. I mean, just cool shirts saying, I love America with a German pointer on it. I mean, just good stuff. All sorts of resistance to tyrants is obedience to God Punisher shirts. I mean, there are some kick-ass stuff there. Look at that one, American Supply Co. I designed that bad baby. America established 1776 Supply Company. Woo! I like it. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Listening to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at X.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm going to take your calls this hour. I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines now. The number to dial is 1-877-789-2539. 1-877-789-2539. We are, of course, monitoring the feeds. We'll bring you any, you know, breaking updates when it comes to the war in Iran. Of course, it's been a bizarre couple of days with the American leadership, so-called, just aggressively flailing, I think is how I'll put it. Flailing in an aggressive fashion. Let me know when you have my computer screen, guys, because as we saw during the war in Gaza, war against Gaza by Israel, you'd have things like American politicians going over there and signing bombs, you know. This is for October 7th, or like, I hope this hits a child. You know, whatever sort of message they were sending to the innocent and trapped people they were bombing in tent cities in Gaza. It's very offensive. It's very strange to have American politicians gleefully, literally signing on to a genocide, essentially, the bombing campaign that left Gaza in absolute ruins. Well, Iran has a similar tradition, only a little bit of a different message. They've posted a picture of a giant missile. It says, message on Iran's latest missile barrage on Israel, quote, in the memory of the victims of Epstein Island. Look, I know they're just playing, you know, they're just doing PR, but it's smart. But it's smart PR. Because now you've got, you know, the Washington Post and others going, it's Iranian propaganda to associate this with Epstein. Like, not really. Not really. In fact, the similarities, the overlap is sort of undeniable. Hard to ignore. But Iran's playing it up. I guess this is just like the issue when you actually have a country that's been thoroughly infested by criminal cabal of blackmailing sex traffickers from Israel. Yeah, Iran gets to mock you for it, I guess. Yeah, finish them. America loves Israel. Always. Nikki Haley. Finish them. Incredible. Did I give out the phone number? The number to dial is 1-877-789-2539. 1-877-789-2539. That's 1-877-789-2539. We are taking your calls now on the war in the Middle East. And once again, if you want to know the truth about it, and I swear I've been saying this for the last 5 years that I've been on the air, if you want to know about the Middle East, the history, the current events, or the future, look at Lebanon. Not a lot of people mention it. Lebanon's always a, you know, sideshow. It's always the war on Gaza and Hezbollah is involved, and the war on Iran, and we're attacking Lebanon also. If you actually take Lebanon for your center point, if you take a point of view located in Lebanon and looking at everything from that perspective, everything actually becomes a lot more clear and actually makes a lot more sense. And actually, if you certainly study the history of Lebanon, it's like a microcosm of what's happening the world over, which is why I've talked about Lebanon so much and why I find it such an interesting, you know, point of attention, and why it's frustrating to me that like nobody else pays attention to it. I don't know why it is, but you bring up Lebanon, everybody's like, yeah, whatever, and it turns it off. Iran, oh, everybody wants to talk about that. Lebanon is key. Lebanon is key. Hezbollah is key to understanding the Middle East. Right now, what it does most importantly is illustrate and reframe everything we're hearing about Iran. Because at the same time that we're at war with Iran, Lebanon is being devastated by Israel with help from America. We provide them cover, and we, you know, nothing they do is without our permission and cooperation. And so you can argue and squabble and debate whether any of the claims are valid about Iran. There is no argument. None of them are valid about Lebanon. And so it just puts into perspective. It makes clear. It's like, okay, everything they're saying about Iran, it doesn't really matter, because at the end of the day, look at Lebanon. They're just going to attack people. They're just going to try to drive people out. At this moment, 700,000 Lebanese have been displaced. 1 million Israelis are in shelters. The IDF struck hundreds of targets in Lebanon since this weekend and ordered what officials described as an unprecedented evacuations as Hezbollah attacks reached central Israel. About 700 people have been displaced from their homes in Lebanon in recent days. Following evacuation orders described as unprecedented, hundreds have been killed in IDF bombings across the country, dozens of them women and children. So remember, Hamas doesn't exist in Lebanon. They aren't hiding under the cities, and so they're using human shields. No, not really. I mean, Hezbollah exists in Lebanon, but it doesn't mean you just get to bomb the hell out of the capital city of a country because they have a problem. You know, they have a militia that exists in their country that they don't even have the ability to get out of their country. But then you look at like the different factions that get involved in Lebanon, and Lebanon has a sizable population of Christians. They're known as the Maronite Catholics in particular, known as the Maronite faction in Lebanon, but they're the Lebanese Catholics. And right now, they're like, over the last few days has been a heroic but tragic story of a Lebanese priest. Basically, you know, Israel came and issued evacuation orders to these towns, and the Catholic priest there said, we're not evacuating. There's no Hezbollah here. That's been confirmed. We don't have weapons. We are not armed. We cannot fight you, but we're not leaving. And so Israel bombed him. And actually, they bombed the church, and there were some, you know, parishioners that were trapped in the rubble. And when this priest, Catholic priest, went rushing to try to rescue the people who'd been injured in the first bombing, they did a second strike, as they often do, to hit the first responders and killed this priest in the strike. Now you have the Maronite Christians calling on the Vatican to mobilize in defense of the Christians in Lebanon, where once again, it is indefensible. These cities that they're bombing do not have Hezbollah in it, and it's like guaranteed, it's known. This priest that died, he was like an important guy. He met with the president of Lebanon. He was in good standing with the Lebanese government, and Hezbollah was not in his area. And he died like a martyr, refusing to leave under threat of death, not fighting back, not posing a threat, simply being murdered. And this really should be a rallying call for Christians around the world. And I know the Vatican magazine did publish a cover shot with the graves of the children killed in the Iranian strike on the school, condemning that and bemoaning the, you know, senseless loss of innocent blood in the Middle East. So everything comes into a little bit clearer relief when you look at Lebanon in particular. Gaza, you got Hamas, it gets a little bit fuzzy. Iran, you got all these different claims. It's a debacle, but they're certainly a dangerous enemy. Lebanon is where the sides are very clear, and there's not a lot of nuance, and there's not a lot of justification for what happens. And then you look at that picture that we just saw. And this, again, if you look back at the Lebanese Civil War, you'll see factions that you wouldn't normally expect. This is Syria Retold Daily. This is a Al-Qaeda. This is the Al-Jolani Al-Qaeda extremist faction in Syria. They say, our eyes are on Lebanon. Big surprises in the coming days. Expect us. So in Lebanon, you have the extremist Jolani ISIS faction teaming up with the Israeli faction to go after Hezbollah to leave Lebanon defenseless so it can be taken over, possibly partitioned, with a portion conquered by Israel and another portion absorbed into greater Syria. Is it becoming clear now, like, what the real factions are? Like, that it's not Muslim versus Jew, or Muslim versus Christians and Jews, or Christians versus... No. There's multiple divisions. There are lots of, you know, intertwined alliances that you have to deal with. But at the end of the day, the Shia and the Orthodox team up in opposition to the Sunni, the Israelis, and actually in the civil war in Lebanon, the Maronites. It's really interesting, because now, probably regretting that, now the Maronites are not in favor of Israel, but they were back in the 1980s, at the time that they wanted to get rid of the PLO and were cooperating with Israel for that. I'm just saying look at Lebanon, pay attention to Lebanon, and ask yourself why Lebanon gets so little attention in the media when it clearly embodies of an outsized, you know, portion of the strategic planning of the people involved. But there you go. You got ISIS, Al-Qaeda teaming up with Israel to attack Lebanon, try to get them in a pincer move as they attack from the north and Israel from the south. Now, Israel is also, you know, Hezbollah, like, downed a helicopter, they claim, or at least drove back multiple incursions into the Bekaa Valley by Israel. The stories about that are very interesting. Apparently, Israel is wearing Lebanese army uniforms, which is a war crime, but they did that. And the whole thing was predicated on retrieving the bones of a IDF soldier that had been killed there like 40 years ago. And it's one of these weird situations where either that's true, in which case, once again, we have a little bit more evidence that really the religious extremists in this conflict are the Israelis. After all, they like went in, like killed 40 people, lost soldiers, all for just like the symbol of these bones being returned because they're on profane, goyish land and they must be returned to sacred Israel. And it's like, you killed 40 people over that? That's pretty extreme. That's kind of a religiously extreme position to take. So either they're telling the truth about why they keep sending in like suicide missions to kill a bunch of people, and it's all about returning these bones like they're some sacred relic, crazy, or they're lying about that, and that's just the cover for, you know, much more like real and tangible military activity, in which case I would wonder what that is. What is worth sending in helicopter after helicopter as they keep getting blown up, or your people getting captured? It's just completely insane. And so once again, the rumors of Hezbollah's demise were overblown, right? It's like, yeah, they're still there and they're still actually winning. They're actually winning in all of this, which is incredible, whether you like it or not. Let's go out to your calls now. We've got Sean in California. Go ahead, Sean, you're on the air. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, Harrison, good talking to you again. Wanted to compliment you on a Gray Area Talks with Rex and Tim the other day. Conversations like that, especially in regards to Iran, are what you younger guys need to be doing, because it's your generation that's going to be, you know, drafted and conscripted to this. My generation, Gen X, we're kind of on the way out, you know, like the boomers. We're going to be at the last of the line if they have to conscript people. So you guys, you know, you're doing the right thing. You've been on fire today, point by point by point. And I just want to say, keep it up. The last guest you had was on point. And you guys got to weigh this out. This is your future. I'm not saying I'm passing the baton just yet, but there's a lot of us, we realize it's going to be on you guys to figure out where does this country goes. And those discussions that you're doing and this news coverage you're doing is a vital part of keeping the public informed. So I thank you. And I want to tell everyone, get that methylene blue, guys, because I've been using that. And let me tell you, I can go 3 days without brain fog or an energy drink when I take a few drops of that methylene blue. So,
it is powerful stuff. Thank you so much, Sean. And yeah, everybody should go watch Gray Area Talks with Rex and Tim. And I was on there on Sunday. It was a good conversation because they ask good questions and they have good sort of, you know, especially I mean, Rex is amazing. Obviously, everybody knows Rex. Tim has a different kind of attitude where he always kind of brings it back to reality and kind of goes, well, hold on, let's recenter. Anyway, very good stuff. And of course, they're significantly younger than I am. So they really are the future. And of course, everybody in the younger generations just knows so much better how to navigate propaganda and how not to be fooled by this stuff. And it's funny because people are framing this as if it's like, well, when the boomers finally leave, you know, the crazies are going to take over. It's like, no, we're not the crazies. We're not the ones who start wars. We're not the ones who have been just saturated in ridiculous propaganda for several decades, the point where we can't break out of it. Like, no, we're born free and we'll continue to be. And of course, the younger people have an even better time of it than I do. Thanks for the call, Sean. Let's go to Michael in New Mexico now. Let's talk about what victory would look like for the Iran war. Go ahead, Michael. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. I just have a comment that everything Trump is talking about in terms of victory has to do with specifically conventional warfare. And it just makes me think of how with like school shootings, a teenager that's hardly held a gun can do so much damage before he's finally stopped. So even if Iranian special forces are much, much worse than ours, to just think of like how much damage one team could do. And in terms of this, our country was founded on basically American Revolution standing up to a much stronger force. So I just think it's so arrogant that we think that a smaller, like unconventional force couldn't do damage against us. And I remember reading like some book done by a special forces like individual and like talking about fighting like Iraq or like Afghanistan. And he said that if they underestimated like the enemy being the Taliban or Al Qaeda, they would probably get killed, even though they're like so much like stronger.
Right.
I just think we've like really miscalculated things here because everything we're talking about is conventional victories, not what they could do unconventionally.
Right. No, that's a bunch of great points, Michael. I really appreciate that call. Yeah, it's really interesting way of thinking about it. I don't think I have anything to add. I think you're exactly right. Appreciate the phone call. Yeah, I think we're all sort of on the same page here. All the normal people are kind of on the same page. It's just that elite, you know, and now analyst class that goes on CNN. They can't quite figure out like this incredibly simple and obvious stuff that we can. Amazing, isn't it? We got another Sean in Colorado this time. Sean from Colorado, thank you for calling in.
Hi, Harrison. Yeah, let me just be clear about how this war in Iran started. I mean, the plan started ever since the plans were in place for 9/11. And, you know, I know you know that. It's just I want to make it clear that this is all about the Greater Israel Project. This has nothing to do with, you know, the freedom of the Iranian people and everything else. And I'll argue that there's more people out there that hate the United States, want death to the United States, death to Israel, all that. So, you know, to think that these people are all over here, like, cheering us on, and I'm sure there's groups of that, you know, those people that think that, you know, they're going to get a better regime or whatever. But this has nothing to do with, you know, their freedom. And like I said, I'm sure you know that. I just want to make it clear for the audience. But this all leads to prophecy. This all leads to Revelation. I just can't stress it enough how close we are to it. And I know you don't really get excited about talking about prophecy. You made that clear yesterday with your guest, but he made some really good points that this stuff is all coming. It's all getting ready to happen, and exactly when, we don't know, but you can't sit here and act like it's not right around the corner. I mean, especially when the Israeli soldiers have their patches with the Greater Israel Project in the temple, where they did the real sacrifice of the red heifer. That was not a joke. Let's be clear. That was a real, the blemishless red heifer. They went ahead and did it. They're doing their little miracles or whatever, sprinkling the ashes. That's a part of their thing. So And it's important to understand the lost sheep of the house of Israel is doing exactly what the scriptures said they'll do. They're supposed to be lost. They're supposed to usher in their Antichrist. And they won't come to repentance until midway through the tribulation, when the remnant will flee from Jerusalem and they'll flee to the mountains for protection from God. And that's when the Jews get saved. And it's important to understand because, listen, Harrison, I know you want to believe this replacement theology, but the church did not replace Israel. God still has to go back to dealing with Israel and the heathen of the world in a very harsh way during Revelation. And that's why he brings the two witnesses. That's why the 144,000 are there to preach the gospel, to get the lost sheep of the house of Israel to come to repent, because they're lost. They're going to be doing a bunch of goofy stuff, so there's really no point in supporting all that like a lot of Zionist churches are, and they're lying to you if they're saying that, Israel isn't doing anything, they're just a victim in all this. No, they're going to continue to provoke their enemies to war. This is what the Antichrist will do, and all these countries, these nations, are eventually going to be at the doorstep of Israel, and they're going to take over half that city over there in Jerusalem, and it's going to get really nasty, and I just advise people,
It absolutely could. My thing about prophecy is that, in my opinion, you're not really supposed to change your behavior based on it, right? It's going to happen no matter what you do. So the idea, you're just supposed to follow Jesus, you're supposed to act right, and, not be changing your behavior because you're trying to fulfill prophecy. That's just not how it works. So if you want to try to, glean information about the future by interpreting, current events through prophecy, you may be able to do that. The problem is that the people like Benjamin Netanyahu, you think this guy believes in prophecy? Absolutely not. But he is more than happy to read, passages out of the Torah about Amalek and trick a bunch of, evangelicals into supporting him because they believe the prophecy. I think the prophecy of the end times is used by bad actors who not only, maybe they believe it, maybe they don't, but they orchestrate things deliberately to take advantage of prophecy. I mean, it's like the Bene Gesserit in Dune, right? You just see the every, planetary world with rumors and prophecies about strangers that would come and change things. And then if you're a Bene Gesserit, anywhere you go as a pre-made, population that's ready to accept you as their leader. These things are very useful to the bad guys to manipulate and use. And look back in history. I know it sounds shocking to think because of all the technology, because of how perfectly things are aligning, seemingly in some cases with the end times, that it's like, this has to be it. This has to be the end. I'm telling you, people literally committed mass suicide over their beliefs. You think they felt any less strongly than you do? Just understand that it could very well be in 10 years that Israel is something completely different. There's a Palestinian state now, and Israel has become a multi-ethnic, democracy. And who knows what happens next? But the idea that this is going to happen, we are going to go to nuclear war, and they're going to build the third temple, and the Antichrist is going to come, you don't know that, and you have no way of knowing that. And God will make a fool of you for thinking that you know that. And everybody else who's ever tried to rebuild the third temple was met with earthquakes and plagues and humiliation and catastrophic failure. I don't understand why this would be any different this time. So that's my take on prophecy, is I think it's being used by smart people to trick dumb people. It's still true, only you're not supposed to do anything about it or try to help it come about. God has it in hand. Thank you.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer, is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan talks about it, I have for years. But here it is. Scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62, that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public that's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation. in the tissue. And these embendazole, fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, and sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 million people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this house where they put it in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger, pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on, medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, oh, I've been on this since 2004. When I got blown up in Iraq, I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I went and did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue. With this water, I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at theelvishowstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at theelvishowstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger. Exclusively available through our sponsor, theelvishowstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells. The methylene blue and iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at theelvishowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, folks. Final segment of the War Room. Let me go back out to your phone calls. A couple things first. For one thing, I want to draw attention to this user on X named Junior Trades, but it's Junior spelled with a V instead of a U, J-V-N-I-O-R Trades. It's a backup account to another account that was just called Junior. And it was a very useful account. I'd been getting a lot of the videos that I've been playing here from his account. He's a Palestinian who has connections there and was able to, you know, post a lot of videos from sources that you didn't get anywhere else. But he disappeared yesterday. His account disappeared. And he took to his alt account, basically saying that he's being stalked. He says, right now I'm leaving my home and heading somewhere else, somewhere safe. I never imagined my life would reach a point like this. I never imagined the words on a screen could carry so much weight, so much anger, so much misunderstanding. He says his account was banned. He says, I'm not suicidal. I'll be making a public statement very soon. My life is currently under threat. I'm in danger. If you see this, please repost or reply a dot. I looked into this guy. He seems legit, and he's posted some screenshots of some of the people threatening him. But he basically says that he's a Muslim guy. He's Palestinian, born in Palestine. But he says, when I got back home, there were cars in front of my property and a few people circling my house. I had to leave to a safe spot. Not sure what's going on. I'm sorry for anything I ever posted on X. I know free speech comes at a price. I'm not willing to let my family pay it. My main got banned 12 hours ago. Now my life is under constant threat in real life, and people are getting ideas against me. I'm not sure what's going on. Losing my platform after being doxxed is possibly the worst thing that could happen, as I cannot even report content or fight back against those who are attacking my platform. I realize I've made mistakes, and some posts hurt the opinions of people, but I truly believe in free speech. That's why I practiced it. And it's just freaky to me because yesterday as I was reading, you know, him saying he was banned and his life was in danger and people were like showing up to his house. And he says he has it all on video and he's, you know, going to publish a report about it. And I was thinking he was still in like the Middle East. He's from Palestine. Obviously, most of his content is Middle Eastern. And I'm thinking, gee, too bad he's not in America. Stuff like that doesn't happen. No, he's in America, in Canada. And apparently people are stalking to him to his house. And the sad thing is, I'm like, it's probably the FBI. It's probably, I mean, he's posting things from Palestine. He's posting images of, you know, Tel Aviv getting hit with rockets. And we know that, or at least the rumors are, that the FBI is apparently knocking on doors of people that are against the Iran war. That's at least the rumors we are hearing. It's just a kind of scary situation when you can have death threats, mysterious people showing up at your home because of what you're posting online, and then knowing if you go to the authorities, they might be on the side of the doxers. They might be on the side of the people trying to intimidate you. They might be going, well, maybe you shouldn't have posted that. Maybe then they wouldn't be so mad at you. It's just a very kind of terrifying situation. And I hope he's all right. I hope, I don't know, maybe the whole thing's fake and I'll be made a fool of. That would be a good outcome to this. But it's very infuriating that as Americans, we even have to worry about this type of stuff, as we all should and do, because we're dealing with extremists at the highest levels of our government. It's a very dangerous situation to be in, but we'll move on regardless. We will trudge forward against all odds, because what are we going to do, lie? What are we going to do, not tell the truth about what's going on? Ridiculous. So we will take the risks, and I just hope in some way using my platform to draw awareness to this helps defeat the people trying to silence us, all of us together. I want to go now to a video, because this is very much in line with what the previous caller was saying. And I just want you to understand, and we don't have to play the video because it's, yeah, everybody knows it and we've seen it enough, but, and actually goes, it actually, I could take this all the way back to the 80s, but let's just start with 2001. Starting in 2001, I don't need to play the video, but everybody knows the video of General Wesley Clark saying in 2001 they had a plan for 7 countries in 5 years, Lebanon, Syria, Libya, Iraq, check, 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 finishing off with Iran. Okay, so 2001, that's what the war aims are. That's what everything is being, you know, decided on. But they don't quite, you know, get all the way. They run into some trouble. Actually, I think the whole thing kind of runs into a roadblock when in 2006 they tried to invade Lebanon, check that off the list, and what do you know, Hezbollah puts a stop to it and they have to reorganize and reform. But it's not like they stopped. For the entirety of the George W. Bush campaign, they obviously were extremely successful in getting us to wage senseless war against their enemies. And then Obama swooped into town, and Obama was apparently treated to exactly the same types of pressure that the Bush administration was treated to. In fact, this is a video of Secretary of State Anthony Blinken describing one of the methods that the Israelis tried to use to pressure the Obama administration, or rather, this must have been the Biden administration. You know, I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll go to the Anthony Blinken in just a second, but just to lay out the timeline. Bush, obviously, massive pressure. We have to get to Iran, 7 countries in 5 years. Then Obama comes into power. And you have things like this. When Obama took office, many allies feared that his offers of engagement would make him appear weak to the Iranians. But the cables show how Mr. Obama's aides quickly countered those worries by rolling out a plan to encircle Iran with economic sanctions, et cetera, et cetera. They believed, in essence, the administration expected its outreach to fail, but believed that it had to make a bona fide attempt in order to build support for tougher measures. Right. So reaching out diplomatically, but knowing that it might not succeed, but that's okay because you really want to get to the military, you know, side of things, but you gotta you got to do the performative sort of diplomatic, you know, the mummers show before anything. These measures included an array of sanctions considerably harsher than any before attempted. By the time of the so-called Arab Spring in 2011, the Obama administration's obsession with regime change in Iran was made explicit. David Sanger of the New York Times noted in April 2011 that, quote, containing Iran's power remains their central goal in the Middle East, and that, quote, every decision from Libya to Yemen to Behran to Syria is being examined under the prism of how to slow Iran's nuclear progress and speed the arrival of opportunities for a successful uprising there, emphasis added. Promoting regime change in Syria played a key role in such calculations because, quote, as some in Mr. Obama's war council have noted, if protesters succeed in Syria, Iran could be next, emphasis added. Sanger notes further that the NATO bombing of Libya was undertaken as a way to send a threatening message to Iran and to illustrate U.S. military capabilities to Iranian planners. Okay, so you've got the Bush years. Obviously, massive influence, Iraq war, Afghanistan war, total chaos. Then you have the Obama years with the Arab Spring and the attempted war on Syria and the overthrow of Gaddafi and the murder of him by his own people in the streets. All of these things, admittedly, predicated on strategically weakening Iran and trying to eventually get to that ultimate goal of destroying Iran once and for all. Then you have the second Trump administration. They, of course, you know, willing collaborators with Israel, getting rid of the Iran sanctions, doing a ton of you know, giving them the Golan Heights and so many other things that, you know, allowed them to continue their ultimate drive, their decades-long psychotic impulse to destroy Iran at all costs by pressuring America into it continuously. Then you get to Biden. Here's Anthony Blinken describing one of the pressures that Israel used to try to get the Biden administration into conflict with Iran directly. Let's watch.
Look, you know, this has been a long story when it comes to Iran. And back during the Obama administration, the Israelis were pushing President Obama to take military action against Iran and were warning that they would do it themselves if he didn't. And he wouldn't because he thought the better way to get at the nuclear program, which is what we were focused on, was through very muscular diplomacy backed up by very, very strong sanctions that we rallied the world to put in place. And then we got the Iran nuclear agreement.
So did you hear that? Israel tried to pressure Obama into attacking Iran by claiming they would attack Iran if he didn't. It sounds like Obama called their bluff and Trump folded, is what it sounds like. It sounds like they used exactly the same strategy that they used successfully against Trump. Hey, you do it or we're going to do it. Trump said okay and did it. Sounds like Obama actually stood his ground, called their bluff, and didn't fall for the intimidation. Isn't that interesting? So again, the war aims of Iran. Oh, we have to free them. This is for the Iranian people. Actually, it's because of this. Actually, it's their ballistic missiles. Just don't even argue with it. Just understand. Just be above it all. Just understand that from way before the Bush administration, but at the very least, we have very well-established, publicly acknowledged patterns where Israel tries desperately through hook and crook, through intimidation, blackmail, deception, feeding people false information. I mean, where do you think the weapons of mass destruction lie came from in the first place? Time and time again, from Bush to Obama to Trump to Biden to Obama, every time you have Iranian warmongers in their ear desperately pushing them, attack Iran, do all of this other stuff to get ready to attack Iran. And it seems like Trump, against all odds, was the one American president weak enough to fall for it, spineless enough to let himself be pushed around, and stupid enough to believe their lies. It's unfortunate. But I think the only solution to this is, as I've been advocating for forever, but now is even more, you know, intense, this desire. We have to thoroughly, in a complete and holistic way, eradicate Israeli influence from the American government once and for all, by root and branch, immediately. With that, we got to the calls. We've got Josh in Florida, who I understand disagrees with me, I suppose. Go ahead, Josh. You're on the air.
Hey, what's up, Harrison? It's not really a disagreement with with you personally. I've been a listener, a supporter. You have Methylene Blue. It was amazing. Been listening to Alex since that David Gergen interview. I think it was Martial Law 911. Called in a lot, but my disagreement is more of I think when you guys spend a year, you know, saying how brown people, Muslims are bad, and then are Pete Hegseth with the Crusader Cross, and then you sell Crusader type items. I mean, look what's happening. It's like we're going into Constantinople again. And I happen to have a unique view. My mom being Irish English, my dad from Pakistan. I grew up with a Bible and a Quran next to me. I'm a Christian. I'm a follower of Christ. But Muslims and Christians have a lot more in common than Jews and Christians, especially when you read, you know, their version of Revelation, where the Mahdi gathers all the followers, and him and Isa, which is Jesus, they team up to battle the Dajjal. Christians and Muslims don't allow usury. But I think it's just weird when our Department of War, you know, Pete Hegseth, he has a Crusader cross tattooed on him, and then you're selling Crusader products, like, out of nowhere. So I think you got to just be careful how we label things.
And, yeah, I get what you're saying. And look, even the Crusades themselves are a gray area for me. I know, you know, it's common now to say the Crusades are a good thing. And I think they were. I mean, they were a defensive act, right? Those lands were Christian until the Muslims invaded, and they pushed into, you know, Europe for 500 years till Europe finally responded and you know, clapped back against the... So, I'm not sitting up here going, the Crusades were colonialism, white people bad, obviously. I think the Crusades as a symbol are like a good thing. However, you get into the actual details, and like the Byzantines were Orthodox Christian. They actually asked the Catholics to come help, and the Catholics just showed up and sacked the city and like stole a bunch of stuff, and totally, like, really at the end of the day, the Byzantine Empire might have survived if the Catholics hadn't stabbed them in the back. So, like, you know, the whole thing is nuanced. I wasn't in favor of the sacking of Constantinople by the forces of fourth crusade. You know, this stuff is historical and nuanced, and you can take different views of it. At the end of the day, it's about asserting the Christian character of our country and the mission we have as Christians to spread our faith and protect our co-religionists. You don't have to take it so literally, although I think Christians should rule the Middle East. What are we going to do, mess it up? What would happen if you gave, you know, Israel over to the Christians? Are we going to be worse than the Jews? I doubt it. I doubt that'll happen. And, one of the reasons I brought up what was happening to Junior, the account that I, you know, just talked about running away, I messaged him, or I just, you know, retweeted his thing, and he himself responded, like, I'm blown away by the support I have from Christians. Like, he expects Christians to not like him because he's Muslim. It's like, dude, you're telling the truth. You're speaking out against tyranny. You're, you know, supporting what's right. Like, well, you know, why wouldn't we support you? So, I mean, we got to break out of this paradigm. It's not Muslims or Jews. These are not the two options to choose. There is that third. It is Christianity. It doesn't mean that we then support, like, you know, bombing the hell out of Iran just because they happen to be Muslim. Like, that's absurd. And of course, the idea that this is, I mean, obviously we are deep, I'm personally deeply against and highly offended by the fact that they're predicating this war on bringing about the apocalypse and fulfillment of their particular highly dubious interpretation of the Book of Revelation. I mean, that's ridiculous, and America should not be involved in that in the slightest. However, I think probably if you want to go to the root of the problem in America overall, everything is the lack of strong Christianity, is the Christian nature, Christian character of our country being slowly but surely degraded and basically eradicated by this point. I do think we need to be, in a symbolic way, crusaders of the faith. We do need to be taking on the very real enemies of Christ on earth, and not just treat church as like, you know, stories that only have relevance 1,000 years ago that, you know, sound nice. No, we're in a very real battle right now, and it's a battle that has to be fought intelligently. Does that make sense, Josh? Like, you know, we sell the Crusader gear, and I even said when we first started selling the Crusader gear, it's like you can't, unless it's just a simple, like, one line, another line cross, any other cross you use, people will accuse you of having, like, secret, you know, alliances, or, like, that's a Crusader cross. Don't you know that that's, you know, the Masonic, the Knights Templar? And it's like, whatever. It's a cool-looking cross. It looks cool. It is cool. It's a cool historical moment. And it's a reminder that Christianity is actually the aggrieved party here, and that all of the Middle East used to be Christian, all of it. The Desvolt, no retreat, no surrender sweater. It's probably the coolest hoodie we have, actually. It's this awesome red color. I wear mine around rather often, and it's got that very cool Crusader cross. Does that make sense, Josh, why the iconography, I think, is not at odds with, you know, actually loving everybody, loving Muslims, Jews just as much as Christians, but also understanding we are Christians, and we have a responsibility to fight for our faith. Does that make sense?
Hey, it makes sense. And I'm a Ron Paul Republican. Ron Paul says the reason why they hate us is because of blowback. It's because we've been there for a long time. There was a 600-year period in Israel under Persian Muslim rule when they also were in Spain, where it was all peace. The Crusades were mainly done out of England becoming unified and the Viking raid stopping and knights having nothing to do.
There was an aspect of that. No, it's a super interesting, you know, historical situation. And I think it has, I mean, you know, the other thing is that, like, I think I said yesterday, like, I would have a very different view of the war in Iran if I just thought this was strictly like America doing America things, or Christians just being like, we have to fight for Christianity. It's the fact that it's not. And if that was our motivation, we never would have gone to war with Iran. So it doesn't even make sense, really, at the end of the day. But it's like, they might dress this up as a Christian mission, but it's just not. They might want to portray this as a crusade, but, like, there are no crusades with Jewish people in the Middle Ages, right? Quite the opposite of that. So, again, don't let the iconography, you know, scare you away from understanding this stuff. It's however you choose to employ it, and we choose to employ Christianity as not just the foundations of our beliefs, but also something that the decline of has led to a lot of disastrous things, right? The understanding that because we're not Christian, because our Christian character in America has been degraded, and we've allowed it to be degraded, that in and of itself has led to so much of the other chaos and misery that we witness on a daily basis. Let's go to Jeff Smith in Pennsylvania now. Thank you so much for the call. I do appreciate it, Josh. Jeff Smith in Pennsylvania, line 7. Go ahead.
Hey, Harrison. Love your stuff and love the products. I've been listening to you guys for about 5 years now, and I'm one of the 80-year-old boomers that don't think like boomers.
Good.
I tried for a long time to figure out why things were going the way they were, and I've just lost all reason as to why they're going the way they are. So,
right.
We'll have to wait and see, I guess. But I had two things I wanted to ask you. One is a question. And I don't want the answer to shorten up my time to discuss the other thing. I just wanted to know, and if it's an issue, just tell me. It's none of my business. But whatever happened to Chase Geyser? If the first question.
Well, I can answer that. I can answer that very, very quickly. Chase went to work at Bigley. He moved to Arkansas and has since stopped working with them and is doing his own thing in Nashville now. We love Chase. It's just, you know. He moved on and went on to do bigger and better things. So we still love Chase, and he still is doing, I think he's doing something for censor.tv now. But yeah, he moved up to do our operations behind the scenes in Arkansas. And then since then moved on to Nashville and is doing his own thing now and setting up a podcast studio and killing it. So we love Chase, but that's why he's not around here anymore. He doesn't live in Austin, but we'd love for him to come back occasionally, and we'll have him on whenever he does. So that answers that question. What's your next one?
The other one is, I came across, and this I told the screener, this has to do with the Iran-Israel war, but more has to do with Israel and the Jewish situation, and that is that I came across a podcast by a fellow by the name of Tudor Alexander. The name of the podcast is called The Dance of Life. I've never known whether you ever heard of him. There's hundreds of thousands of podcasters out there. This was done over 2 years ago. It had 1.6 million views, so it's not a small thing. But the title of the podcast is Why the Jews Are Not God's Chosen People, and it's dated 2024. Now, I can't get into the whole thing because it's an hour and almost an hour and a half long. But I am not anywhere near being a scholar of this. I just look at things and listen to things, and there's no way that I can tell whether this is true or not. It seems like when I listen to it, he's got a lot of backup, a lot of information that seems to be true, but I wanted to see if during your air quotes free time, you could check this out and see if there's any, because I'll tell you what, there's things on this podcast that absolutely just floored me.
Wow.
About the Jews, about the Jewish people, about some of the world leaders in the past that were not Jews, that were Jews that I never knew, like maybe Stalin and Trotsky and Lenin, and you know, on and on and on. Just stuff that came out of the blue that I just was like, what? Are you kidding me?
It's tough because then you feel the need to go. You're like, I would have heard of this. You got to go back and fact check everything. I'll check it out. Thank you for the suggestion. And look, it's an important question right now because a lot of geopolitical activity is predicated on this assertion that the Jews are the chosen people. Therefore, they have a right to Israel. I mean, it's not purely a question of religion or theocratic interpretation. It's like this has real tangible effects on the world. So it's worth investigating and finding out. So I will check that out. Thank you. There's a couple people that do really good work in that regard that we're going to try to have on. One that I have often suggested, his name is Ash Mays, M-A-I-Z. Look him up on YouTube. He's a former Orthodox Jew that just dismantles the arguments in a really respectful and impactful way. Thanks for being with us, folks. We'll see you tomorrow.
Has InfoWars not delivered? In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or you know, in the arena, and he says, "Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?"
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the InfoWar continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for Team Humanity, against the globalist, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried ultramethylene blue or our bovine colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you can become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it reoccurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click in your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexjonesstore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet, up to 40% off store-wide, 25% off on the shirts, on the hats, 10% off on things like the collectible knives, and up to 40% off on supplements like ultramethylene blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March mega sale right now, running until the 17th at theofficerstore.com and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. I'm going to salute you and thank you. Take action now.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.